A few months ago, I found myself sitting in a small room in Washington, D.C., surrounded by a group of four very distinguished retired Methodist ministers. It was a hot day, even for D.C. in the springtime, and the room seemed to grow stuffier and hotter with each passing moment. Seconds before, one of the ministers had glanced at the flaming chalice on my lapel and asked the one question that I knew was coming, but that I still didn't really have an answer for. What is the ministry God is calling you to do in the world? What is your calling? A strange question for a Unitarian Universalist. And yet, what question is more important in our lives? Each of us asks this question, implicitly or explicitly. What are we meant to do? We ask this of ourselves throughout our lives, when we start school, when we choose friends, when we go to college, when we start a career, and sometimes we wonder if the career and the friends we've chosen were the right ones. This question of vocation, of calling, has been the focus of my thoughts the last couple months, both as a personal question and a collective one, as I work with this congregation to build community and social justice action through the 2020 Vision Conference that we had last fall and the ongoing conversations that we've had since then. So the word vocation comes from the Latin vocare, to call. And while it's a more general term now, it was explicitly religious in its earliest uses. The Christian Bible is full of quite literal calls. Moses is walking in the wilderness and he sees a burning bush, and Exodus says, "And God called to him out of the bush, 'Moses, Moses,' and he said, 'Here I am.' On the road to Damascus, Saul sees a flash of light and falls to the ground. 'Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me?' a voice calls from the sky. And scripture tells us, Saul becomes Paul and dedicates his life to spreading the message that he believes in. This idea of calling or vocation is not just a Christian one. There's another story tells us of a certain prince, born into a life of privilege, with every need and want provided to him for 29 years. For 29 years, he was sheltered from the realities of the world. For 29 years, he never left the castle that was his home. As he traveled down the road that first time, he saw a man whose skin was wrinkled and who walked more slowly than he had ever seen a man walk before. 'What's this?' he asked. And his charioteer explained old age to him. On the next trip from the castle, the man saw a sick man. Another day, a dead body. Another day, an ascetic. After seeing the reality of the world, Prince Siddhartha left his life of privilege in search of enlightenment. 2,500 years later, history remembers him as the Buddha, the awakened one. But in the end, I'm Unitarian Universalist. And as a rule, I don't know many of us who have had a Damascus Road moment struck blind by the majesty of the seven principles. So how do we answer the question of vocation then? We affirm the free and responsible search for truth and meaning, and maybe that can be the starting point. I've never had the kind of conversion experience of a Moses or a Saul, but perhaps, like Siddhartha, I have seen and experienced much in the last few years. If what's past is prologue, laying the foundations for the choices we make, the place to look for our vocation is in the stories of who we are and how we've gotten here. My family, several of whom are here, has a lot of ministers in it. I grew up on stories of my great-grandfather agitating for unions in Chicago in the 1920s. Of Uncle Jack marching in Selma in the civil rights movement. And while we have moved away from organized religion in the last two generations, it's still a big part of the story of who we are. My parents have been moving steadily leftward my entire life. And while I was in high school, they joined the Unitarian Universalist Congregation of Binghamton. The UU Church stuck with me, though apparently not its name. And as early as high school, I wondered what it would be like to go to seminary. In college, I majored in religious studies, learning about and immersing myself in the world's great traditions. Ultimately, I decided that the big leap I was ready to take then was not quite to go to seminary, but instead to join the Peace Corps. I left for Peace Corps hoping that 2 years abroad would show me what I was meant to do when I came home. I served in the Kingdom of Lesotho, a tiny country in southern Africa with one of the highest HIV rates in the world. For 2 years, I worked with some of the most amazing people I've ever met, fighting to save their country and their families from a plague that, frankly, we all knew was winning. I went to more than my share of funerals and had more than a few friends and coworkers tell me that they too were infected and that they were working because it was the only way they knew not to lose their hope completely. By the time I came home, I was a very angry person. Friends of mine from New York made a point to pull me aside and ask what happened to the idealistic, well-adjusted, spiritual person that had left 2 years earlier. I told them the truth, as I saw it then. If there was a God, I wanted nothing to do with him. What kind of capricious, mad deity would come up with this world? Thousands of good, decent people were dying in Lesotho every year. And the volunteers that were sent there to help never knew if what they were doing was doing any good. I watched neighbors die of HIV, friends assaulted for the few dollars they had in their pockets, and one day we lost a Peace Corps volunteer in a mugging gone horribly wrong. I told my friends that the part of me that believed in the world as inherently good, a warm place, was gone, left behind somewhere. As the singer Josh Ritter put it, it was as if God had bent down and made the world in 7 days and ever since had been walking away. I told him the truth. Peace Corps broke my heart. I moved to Baltimore after Peace Corps, and started a program in public policy, as far from faith as I could possibly get. Public policy kept me working in social justice, though. While the idealistic faith I had left with was gone, the Peace Corps had left me with an appreciation of the hard skills and knowledge necessary to do good work in the world. Some part of me still believed, though. If not in God, then in the ritual of getting up every Sunday morning, going to church, participating in the life of a community. In my first few weeks in Baltimore, I walked by First Unitarian and before long had joined and become a member. Soon after I joined this congregation, I joined the 2020 Vision Committee. And 2020 is, at its most basic, a process to figure out who we are as a congregation, where it is we're going, our vocation, our calling as a community. As we near our 200th anniversary as a congregation, we're taking a little bit of time to reflect on where it is we've been and where we're going and who we are. This process has involved a lot of talking. We are UUs. Last fall, we held an all-church conference to begin this conversation. Over 100 people attended in this hall. And since then, there have been multiple ongoing conversations and events throughout the congregation. I've been personally involved in the process to narrow a focus for our incredible social action energy and commitment. I believe that while the process can at times feel cumbersome, the 2020 project is seeing successes, frankly, beyond what we imagined when we were putting the conference together. As different members of our congregation get together to talk about topics that 2020 has brought up, they get to know each other a little better. We aren't just hearing about what social justice issues get people out in the streets. We're hearing each other's stories. Who we are, the families we come from, the families we've made, the needs, hopes, and dreams we bring to this place. In a very real sense, the 2020 process is doing more than just figuring out what new program we'll be involved in. It's building our community. Not very long after I started working with the 2020 committee, I was diagnosed with nodular lymphocyte predominant Hodgkin's lymphoma. It's a cancer of the immune system. For 6 months, I was immersed in a world of chemotherapy, falling white blood cell counts, emergency visits to the hospital, my parents driving down on about 6 hours' notice from New York. It's a world few of my fellow patients and I ever imagined that we would be a part of, much less this relatively healthy 25-year-old who hadn't spent the night in the hospital since I was 4. But through it all, I stayed connected to this church, and the love and support I received from you, this congregation, was amazing. Even as work with the 2020 committee reached a fever pitch last fall in the run-up to the All-Church Conference, members of the committee made it a point to pull me aside and ask how I was doing, if I needed a ride anywhere, just to talk for a few minutes. 9 months after my last treatment, I'm happy to say that my doctor has declared me in complete remission. From now on, there will be yearly checkups, a little more attention paid to the size and shape of my lymph nodes, but the crisis has passed and I've come out the other side more or less intact. It seems cliche to say that cancer has a way of clarifying your priorities in life, but there it is. At some point while I was sick, I realized that I may have been a little too quick to dismiss the idea of seminary. I still haven't quite made up my mind about God. If he and I were Facebook friends, our relationship status would undoubtedly be, it's complicated. But through working with and participating in this congregation, I've grown to see that building loving communities is the truest expression of the religious life. Okay, I do have it in the right order. Humanity's capacity for love and kindness, even in the face of terrible suffering, seems boundless. I understood at some point while I was sick the big lesson from Peace Corps. It wasn't that the world was full of suffering. That I was going to learn anyway. It was that even in that suffering, there are people giving everything that they have just to make the world a little bit better, even if they have no idea if what they're doing will actually make a difference. My HIV-positive coworkers were not simply holding on the only way they knew how. They were trying to make things better for their community, for future generations. In a way, they had found their calling and were working to live it in the world. Well, I had to ask myself if I was doing the same thing. A few weeks ago here, we celebrated Poetry Sunday with Hard Times, Better Times as the theme. Last few years have been hard times for me, unquestioningly. But I look around today and know that these are better times. The hard times forced me to see myself, learn who I was and what I needed to be doing. Our community here has also had some hard times. Budgets are tight. Growth may not be what we want it to be. But in these hard times, we're doing the difficult work of figuring out what we want to be in the world. And with each step, we bring those better times a little bit closer. As you use, we have a unique opportunity to build a religious community based not on some shared doctrine or belief, but on that most basic of commandments, love, respect for one another. The 2020 vision process has begun an affirmation of our community, and we'll continue to work to listen and express who we are as a congregation and where it is we're going. It's work that I'm proud to have been a part of and look forward to doing more with. By participating in this work of community, we learn about ourselves. And as we gain more insight into who we are as individuals, our community is strengthened. This community has given me an understanding of who I am, of my own calling. And by participating in it now, with greater awareness of who I am, I believe I can help its work. We all grow from being a part of this place, and mine is only one of the many, many stories like this in the room. I ended up applying to Wesley Theological Seminary in DC, where I'll be starting in September. I was asked to go down there to visit for a weekend, meet faculty members, and be interviewed by a group of prominent Wesley alumni in a small, stuffy room in DC. Or one of them asked me, "What is the ministry God is calling you to do in the world?" I believe that I am called to serve and to build community. UU congregations are where we go, not when we want answers, but to be with each other, to live in what Dr. King called the beloved community. This is where we go to celebrate new life together, to cry together in the darkest nights, to know each other and make together the better world we all know is possible. This place is both a home and an inn on the journey, and in coming here together, we affirm that it is a community worth our time and our love. I cannot imagine work that I would rather be doing than helping this experiment in religious community without doctrine thrive.